On Monday, January the 25th, the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate reached a milestone in their history, the 200 years of their founding. The story of the OMI begins amidst the ashes of the great upheaval of the French Revolution, which has had repercussions worldwide. It was an era when the Catholic Church in France was devastated and held in contempt and ridicule. Nevertheless, on January the 25th, 1816, in Aix-en-Provence in southern France near Marseille, a handful of zealous priests headed by their leader, Eugène de Maisonneuve, committed themselves to serving the lost, the least, and the last, bringing them the good news of Jesus. That group of evangelizers, which later came to be known as the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate, today has some 4,000 members worldwide. To know about the OMI and their 200 years, we talked to Sri Lankan Oblate Father Shanil Jayawardena, the Director of Communications and Webmaster of the OMI here at the Order's headquarters in Rome. Father Jayawardena begins the first of a two-part interview today by explaining how the OMI celebrated their 200 years in their mother house in Aix-en-Provence, France.
It was a two-day celebration. The first day was on the 24th Sunday. We celebrated with the Diocese of Aix-en-Provence, with the bishop who celebrated the Holy Eucharist, and a cathedral full of participants or faithful. And then on the 25th, the day proper, we had a celebration, more kind of a family celebration, with the oblate representatives from Rome and from each region and the people of the vicinity. It was a very significant Holy Eucharist and a festive meal. We had with about 70 odd poor, the elderly, the sick, and the youth around, the people whom Saint de Maisonneuve himself, the founder himself, wanted to care.
Coming to the origins of the OMI 200 years ago, how did it all happen? Was there something very specific that your founder, Maisonneuve, felt, which led him to found this congregation?
Yes, we have got to understand the social context if we are to understand Saint de Maisonneuve. It was post-revolution time, and the period he himself suffered from it. He was also in exile here, also in Italy. And then when he went back, he saw poverty even worse than ever. And he was touched by the poor and the people who did not have proper religious education and evangelization as well. His area, region, spoke the dialect called Provençal. There were no priests who were speaking in that language. And with all this background, he wanted to form a community which was catering mostly to the poor and the most abandoned. And that is how we all started in Aix.
How many were there, the starting group?
It was six of them, Saint de Maisonneuve, Father de Maisonneuve then, and five others.
Well, what is the charism of Saint Maisonneuve?
Okay, it is called evangelizing the poor and the most abandoned.
It has remained right throughout like that, okay, these 200 years?
Exactly. We kept to it. Of course, if I were to elaborate a bit, probably the way we understand poor is also gone through a bit of more reflection, I would say, because the faces of poverty are more than the times of Saint de Maisonneuve. They are spiritually poor as well, but we cater still to the economically poor people and all those people who are treated unjustly in this society, in spite of their economic situation. We are working more on that area of social justice right now.
Now, from the beginning that your founder, Saint Eugène de Maisonneuve, started with, how did it expand to the rest of the world?
Yeah, he had this idea of being a missionary congregation, so the name as well, the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate. But earlier his idea was, you know, not to go out of the country right at the beginning. In fact, the congregation at first, when we were started 200 years ago, was called Missionaries of Provence. And then he realized the need in the whole of the country, France, and then extended communities. But he was not a man, you know, who was happy having so many communities and the number. He was more to quality than quantity. So more than many communities around the country, he had several communities from which they went to the areas, you know, the poor areas, searching for them and all that. And then getting to know this personality and this congregation, there were requests from other countries, and the first few countries were Canada, South Africa, England, and Sri Lanka. So we as South Asians can be proud of that. Sri Lanka was one of those countries the oblates went right at the beginning during the time of the founder himself.
Did he face any difficulty, like many of the founders face initial difficulties, even from the local church authorities, the bishops?
Yes. When he started in 1816, of course, he had the idea even a couple of years before that. He was misunderstood because he was a diocesan priest. His companions themselves were diocesan priests of the same diocese. He was mostly misunderstood. Of course, he wrote to the bishop, and the bishop kind of had this good relationship with him, but there was opposition from the priests, the vicar general, and, you know, these are long stories that he himself writes about. He had this difficulty from the diocese, and he had another difficulty, what kind of a community that he is going to form, because he had two minds. Should it be a monastic life? Because he was not all for serving, but he wanted something interior, something spiritual. So the idea of a community was to come from both these aspects of being missionary in the field and also spiritual. So he found it hard, you know, to realize both these together in one community aspect.
So contemplation and work together.
Exactly.
Now, Sri Lanka happens to be one of the first countries where the OMI stepped into. Could you tell us about its history? Was it on a request?
Yes. The credit should go to the Italian bishop, not an oblate, Bishop Bettachini, the bishop of Jaffna that time, the vicar apostolic. He went to England because Sri Lanka was by that time under the British rule. He went in search of priests because there were a lack of priests. He did not find even one to come to Sri Lanka. But one of his bishop friends told him, there is someone called de Massenet. By that time, he was a bishop of Marseille. Why don't you go to France? He is a man with a large heart. Tell him about the poverty in Sri Lanka, the poor souls in Sri Lanka, and definitely he's going to help you. So he went to France, he met Bishop of Marseille, de Massenet, and de Massenet accepted his request and sent Father Samaria, who would later become the Bishop of Jaffna, and a few other companions along with Father Samaria to Sri Lanka in 1847.
Now, since then, how strong has the OMI community grown into?
We are still, if I'm not mistaken, number-wise, still the number one main religious community in the country. And it is correct to say, if not for the oblates, the major part of the country would not have been in this better situation with regard to Catholicism, because those missionaries who came, especially from Europe, France, Italy, Belgium and so on, they worked so hard, especially in the dioceses of Colombo, Jaffna, and then later on Chilau. So to say, the north and the western areas of the country were completely taken up by the oblates. So up to now, we have been honored and recognized for our service in the history of the local church in Sri Lanka.
What would be the number like in Sri Lanka now of the OMI?
We have two provinces in Sri Lanka, Colombo province and Jaffna province. If we put all both together, we are about 300 oblates in the country. Among those 300, some are working abroad. Now, you know, tables have been changed and now we are sending missionaries abroad. And there are Sri Lankan missionaries who are working in India, Pakistan, Japan, Korea, Bangladesh, and even some of these European countries.
Worldwide, what would be the strength of the OMI?
We are just below 4,000 by number. We were around 4,000 for the last few years. I would say it's a good number compared to many other congregations in the world. And we are in 68 countries in all the five continents. If you include Australia as one of, you know, Asia, we call it Asia-Oceania region. So we are in Asia, we are in Australia, we are in Africa, Europe, North America, and Latin America. Mm.
Which country would be having the largest community of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate? Sri Lanka, I believe?
Is one of them. Is still one of them. Being a Buddhist country, we can still proudly say that we have a large number of oblates in the oblate world. Poland is another country. Canada, still we have a very good number. And France itself.
Then how did the Oblates go into India then?
Okay. So Sri Lanka being the mother of...
That's the entry point.
Entry point. It was from Sri Lanka the missionaries went to India, Pakistan, and of course Bangladesh. It was, if I'm not mistaken, in 1968, the first group of missionaries comprised of both Tamils and Sinhalese first went to Tamil Nadu, and then from there they spread. Now we are also in the north of India, northeast of India, Assam and all that. Mm. And India is a different province now. They were under Sri Lanka, but a few years ago they became a separate province.
That was the first of a two-part interview with Sri Lankan Oblate of Mary Immaculate Father Shanil Jayawardena on the 200 years of his congregation. Tune in the same time next week for the final part of this interview. This has been The Backgrounder, a weekly feature of Vatican Radio's English Service for Asia.